Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We've been doing some special stuff around here in the virus pandemic. We've got the election moved out a couple of weeks. Don Mohler and I have put together, along with our dear friend Fronda Cohen, a bunch of folks who have to do with the arts here. And Don, before we welcome our next guest, and I know he's a friend of yours and another former Baltimore County executive, we had Venatolis by, we've had everybody on. Jim Smith hasn't been by here, but maybe we're making him feel left out at this point. But
we'll get Jim. Dutch.
I know. We'll get to all that, but I want to get to our sponsors here just a little bit because this is a tender period, and I know everyone listening to the Don Hutchinson talking about the zoo is going to be craving some crab cakes before it's all over with, right?
Oh, man, we need crab cakes. Faley's, hey, Don, Faley's will send them right to your door. Just jump on the website. They'll send the crab cakes right to your door throughout the pandemic.
They are terrific, no question.
And State Fair, let's not forget them over Catonsville, and they're coming, to you. And Don, next time you're coming downtown on essential business, you better bring me some essential chicken and waffles.
But you got it.
At some point, we'll get back to doing all that. And of course, Mohler and Gary Realty and Don's son Jeff spent a great hour of conversation talking about Don's grandkids and social distancing and whether he's going to hug mom or dad first when this whole thing. Is over. Don,
you always hug mom. Hey, Donald, you always hug mom first, don't you?
No question about it.
Well, all right. Well, if you're willing to concede that, then that's fine at this point. Don, we've had Kirby Fowler out at Fadley's right before all of this began and talking about the zoo. And I must tell you, with the Bronx Zoo being in the news with COVID and cats and felines and all this, my wife watches Animals and Animal Planet and the Bronx Zoo TV show and the Columbus Zoo TV show, all of this stuff. Cincinnati Zoo, I believe, is also on. We love animals, and at this particular time, people not being able to come out and interact with the animals is crushing, right?
Well, it's really almost impossible to fathom. I walk the campus three or four times a week. I do it when people are here, and now I'm doing it when people aren't here. It's interesting. The animals, as I walk by, actually try to approach me and walk up close. It's obvious that some of them, not all of them, but some of them are very, very aware that there are no folks around to interact with them.
That's heartbreaking, right? Literally, that's heartbreaking.
Well, it is, and it's heartbreaking for us, as you can imagine, on a financial basis, because this, literally, right now, April, May, and June, are our three primary months of interaction with people. This is a time when in May alone we expect almost 100,000 people to come through the gate, and we won't have it this year. April is our second biggest month when it comes to attendance. We will lose around $2.5 to $3 million just in the next 2 months. And the irony is, of course, it doesn't matter if one person shows up at the zoo as a visitor or if 4,000 people show up as visitors, it still costs us almost $60,000 a day to operate the place.
That's
so
incredible.
The income that we receive from the paying customer is really remarkably important. And that includes members. That doesn't mean the people who are just coming through the gate on a daily basis, one day at a time. That includes our members, our corporate members who have their employees who come in the zoo. It includes school groups. But May is 100,000 person a month type of attendance, and April is just below that. This is a real blow to us. And
Brew at the Zoo is a family. You know, it's my son and his wife and my wife. We, you know, it's just something we do, and we love it. And because we all love animals, we all love the zoo, and we all love Brew. Who don't love Brew, right?
Brew at the Zoo is our biggest fundraising event. It's a Memorial Weekend event. We've had terrific success with it over the years. On that particular weekend, we will have somewhere around 17 to 18,000 people come through the gates on a Saturday and a Sunday, and for Brew at the Zoo, and we'll lose all of that this year. We're trying to. It's still scheduled for Memorial Day. We're being realistic. We have a backup date in the last weekend of June, And we'll make an announcement sometime in the next 10 days as to whether or not we push it back then.
For those of you just joining in, just turning on your car, we are with the CEO of the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore, Donald Hutchinson, the sixth Baltimore County executive. And we'll do politics.
What number were you, Mohler?
I was lucky number 13.
13? Oh, wow. Okay.
I was lucky number. And remember, in my first weekend, I had a flood and the tragic loss of a police officer. I remember waking up that Monday morning and said, you know what, maybe we should be like a hotel and just declare me the 14th and skip 13th for another day, you know, because in the beginning, it wasn't going very, very well. But we'll get to politics in a little while. Don, you just put a face on this pandemic that we really haven't been talking about here in Arts Week, and that is the financial impact. Now, when you threw that number out,
that's a big number.
$2.5 million in lost revenue. 100,000 people that typically visit in April. You said
April and May. May is the biggest month, and it's just under 100,000 people that we expect in attendance. And this year, fiscal year, starting last July 1st through this middle of March, right before St. Patrick's Day, we were having a terrific, terrific year. The weather has been great. We have brand new exhibits that we've opened up, and people were coming out particularly, interestingly enough, particularly in January, February, and in early March. We were having terrific attendance with our new exhibits. And we were projecting just under 500,000 people to visit the zoo. And of course, all of that stopped, right in the middle of March, and all of that went away. And of course, what is unknown is when we'll be able to pick it back up. And the other unknown, and this is something that I'm sure all not-for-profits are talking about who have people walking through the gate that support the institution, is that we don't know how people will react when they're allowed to go outside again in the near normal. I won't call it normal, but in the near normal setting, how will they feel and how comfortable will they feel? I think all of us recall that after 9/11, there was a real discomfort with people in flying again. People were afraid to get on airplanes for a while. And we wonder whether or not people will come back to a venue like ours and come back quickly. And, of course, we're doing all the planning for when we reopen to make sure that we still have great respect for things like social distancing. So we don't have queue lines set up at food lines where people are back-to-back. We're very conscious of how people are going to be feeling about this near normal that we'll be experiencing sometime in a couple of 3 or 4 months.
Well, Don, let me give you a great story here because, I mean, you run the zoo and you were running the zoo a couple of years ago and we were part of this. And I didn't reach to you and I probably should have, but we just kind of did it on our own. You know, my wife was diagnosed with leukemia 6 years ago this week. And the guy that saved her life, he saved her life twice. And on the bone marrow registry, on the worldwide registry, because he was German, we had to wait 2 years to know who he was. And he had to check the little box that said he wanted to for her to know, and she had to check the little box saying she wanted to. So she survived 2 bone marrow transplants. We met this man online in June 3 years ago now, and within 5 minutes online we started exchanging pleasantries, and he had saved her life twice, and it was obviously very emotional. And within a few minutes he had exchanged his bucket list that he wanted to come to America, and he had written that in a letter. And on the bucket list, of all the places he wanted to go, the things he said he loved the most were African penguins. And he wanted to go to the African coast to see the penguins. So we brought him to Baltimore about 6 months later, and I Googled. I said to my wife, I said, African penguins? I don't know what kind of penguins they have, and I always call it the – but Don, I call it the Baltimore Zoo because I'm old like you, right?
Sure.
And I said, I don't know what kind of, you know, penguins you have. And I Googled up, and it said – only the world's largest collection in North America, you know, the large African penguins in the world. And so when he came to Baltimore, we kept it on the down low. We didn't tell him anything about it. It was his birthday, and we bought the Penguin Encounter Experience with hope and grace. So there you go. So one of our family memory, incredible family memory,
wow,
is spending time with the penguins.
Well, it's a great experience. I'm glad you mentioned it. And we are the number one breeding institution in North America of wow, African penguins. These are penguins that are native to South Africa. We've replicated the environment that they would live in nature, in South Africa. We have 100 or so penguins. We just actually have had some recent hatches.
Well, you always send Winnie out. Anytime I'm at, across the street at the harbor, Winnie is the friendly penguin that could come here and scare my cat at the house probably at some point, right?
Well, we have eight penguins in what we call our embassy, and they're the animals, they're the penguins that are very comfortable in being close up with humans. And the encounter that you had is a special encounter.
It was special.
A special fee, but it's a terrific experience because not only do you interact with the animal, but you interact with the keeper who knows more about that animal than anybody can imagine. And
I'm impressed, Don, that Nestor knows the name of the...
Oh, yeah, well...
These are my friends. Come on.
He's got it right. Winnie is usually the penguin of choice when we have a traveling penguin.
I got a lot of pictures with Winnie over the years,
yeah,
for
we
sure.
We take penguins out to school groups and the like, and Winnie is one of the eight that travels, but she is frequently the penguin of choice. He also mentioned Hope. Hope is also a popular animal here.
Well, we all need hope right now, right? We all need some grace as well, for sure.
I'm telling you, I learn a little bit every now and then on Baltimore Podcast. That's who you're a penguin.
Don, you were the guy telling me I was going to stick to sports. Remember that? Remember?
Yeah. Well, here's one for you. We our good friend Eddie Dopkin.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, Eddie was a great supporter of the zoo.
And we lost Eddie to leukemia.
We lost Eddie to leukemia a few years ago. Terrific supporter. Miss Shirley's, the founder of Miss Shirley's.
Right.
Free commercial for him, for his company, and a restaurant. But Eddie was a terrific friend of the zoo. And we have a traveling penguin named Eddie.
Ha!
It happened named after Eddie Dopkin. It happens to be a female penguin, but who cares?
Well, then Edie Brown will like that and take the other D out, right?
So, in any event, Nestor, you're right. We have a great collection.
You better name one after Edie Brown before this is all over, because she's her own legend.
You never can tell. That's not a bad suggestion.
Don, what else is? I mean, one of the reasons we wanted to do this, what we're calling Arts Week, is there's going to be a time when we, as you said, whether it's in May or whether it's in June, we are going to ring this victory bell. We're going to come out. People are going to be looking for things to do. What's your elevator speech when you're with somebody, you're having a beer, you just enjoy, say, man, you've got to bring the family to the Maryland Zoo. What's great? What do you promote about the zoo?
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation, and I'll relate it to you in two ways, Don, and you'll be able to appreciate this. You know, before I came here, I was president of SunTrust Bank here in Maryland. Before that, I had a long career dealing with a lot of government public policy organizations after I was in the legislature and after I was county executive.
Greater Baltimore Committee?
Yeah, Greater Baltimore Committee, an organization called Maryland Economic Growth Associates, I was the president of. But when I relate this directly to my banking time. When I was president of the bank and I'd go out to a social event, nobody at nighttime asked me how my commercial banker was. Or, how's that teller? How's that teller in Cockeysville? No, I never had those conversations. When I became president of the zoo, my world changed because whenever I go out in any kind of a social environment and people learn that I'm president of the Maryland Zoo, everybody wants to know how my elephants are. Everybody wants to know how my rhinoceros is. Everybody has an interest in animals. They have their favorite animals. Nestor was just talking about penguins. It's almost difficult to come up with an elevator speech because people are so engaged with what we do and why we do it and how we do it because people love animals. And you can't have a better place than coming to an outside venue like ours, walking in the front gate of a 60-acre-plus park with 60 buildings, with animals spread all around in open environments, wide open environments, much different than what we remembered as kids growing up here in Baltimore. I'm a lifetime Baltimorean. We're all a lifetime Baltimoreans. And when we grew up here, we remember this old zoo with old cages and old closed environment. That's not the case anymore. This is a wide open environment. And these animals, giraffes, elephants, lions, cheetahs, all these animals are important in their own right because they're disappearing in the wild. Here in this zoo, they have a natural environment. We're saving species from really disappearance on the face of the earth. That's a critical role for us. And people enjoy the visit when they come into the outdoors. We give them an outdoor environment for family that everybody can enjoy at one time.
For those just joining, tuning in, we're with Don Hutchinson, a former Baltimore County executive, currently CEO of the Maryland Zoo. Don, what does it cost? And for folks to check it out, they can jump on MarylandZoo.org and find out all the things that you got.
Well, there's web cameras there, too, so there's actually stuff you can look at, yeah.
What does it cost for a family to come to the zoo? They're driving around now and they're saying, man, we're going to get out and we're going to do things. What's it cost for a family to come to the zoo?
Yeah, when you reopen, if you're a family of four, it's going to cost you about $23 a head for the adults and about $19 for children. And children under two, of course, come in free, and that reduced cost for children under the age of 12. Now, one of the things we encourage, and we have 14,000, almost 14,000 family members. If you are repeaters to the zoo, and we have, as you can imagine, moms and dads, but mostly moms, who will visit the zoo on a weekly basis because they buy a family membership. And that membership will cost around, and it depends on the kind of membership you buy. But if you buy a membership for a family of four, it's going to cost you about $130, and that means you get in for to the zoo for free after you put down the $130 for the family. And that's so many of the folks that visit here are family members who come.
And
on
I can come
basis.
As many times with my family as I want.
Once you buy a family membership, you're good for a year.
Wow.
And you can come in and out of the doors anytime you want. And again, I repeat that. And this is mostly true of moms and grandparents who come on a very, very regular basis, on a weekly basis, and are in and out of the zoo many, many times during a given week and a given month. In fact, I interact with them as I walk around the campus, I'll recognize some of the folks or they'll recognize me. They'll tap me on the back and ask me what a special exhibit might mean to the animals that are there. So, yeah, I enjoy doing that, and it's a very, very inexpensive family membership.
Don, I'm going to disappoint you here before we get into politics here. Because are you done with the zoo, Amal, or you want to come back
to
that?
Because, ask one more question.
Sure, go, because I want to get to politics with Don Hutchinson.
We'll jump to politics. I want to tell you.
I know you told me we were going to talk about the zoo because I know he doesn't want to talk about politics at all, right?
Before we jump to that, and Nestor, I will tell you a little anecdote about Don, when we get into the
he's not going
to
like my
politics,
anecdote. I'm going
to politics part. Don, what are you going to? You've had so many experiences. What are you going to miss most about the zoo?
Well, it's actually the keepers. You know, I've never had a job I haven't liked.
Right.
I've had jobs where I was not unhappy to leave when I left. You know, there were different places that I spent 8 or 9 years, and by the time it was time for me to go, I walked out without regret. Now, by the way, county executive was not one of those. If I had been able to stay as Baltimore County executive for the next 40 years, I would have done it.
We got a president that's going to try that in the fall, I think. Yeah.
Greatest job.
it's just a terrific job.
Greatest job in the world, right?
It's just a terrific job, and there's a lot of reasons for it. I won't go into any kind of detail. Right now, but no, a terrific job. But leaving the folks here, the folks that I work with now at the Maryland Zoo, are literally as fine of people I've ever met in my life. And I've had nothing but good professional people work with me wherever I have been. That's true at SunTrust Bank. That's true in Baltimore County. That's true when I was in the legislature for the decade.
Hey, One other quick question about the zoo, and it's so nice to hear you say that. And again, I think it speaks not all to Don. I don't want to blow smoke at you, but it speaks to your leadership. You attract those kind of folks. But I know that when he was alive, our good friend, dear friend, Kevin Kamenetz, one of the last things that he was excited about was having the county get involved in, I want to call it you'll give it a better name, a chimpanzee walker, a path for the chimpanzees. Has that become a reality, or is that?
Oh, yeah, no, that's up. That's up. And it's, the sad part about it is that we were going to have a grand opening the first week of April with Johnny O and Baltimore County leadership, members of the county council, to have a grand opening for colobus monkeys, not chimpanzees, but colobus monkeys. It's a replica of what they've done in Philadelphia throughout their entire zoo. The Philadelphia Zoo is smaller than ours in area, and they've had to build an overhead walkway for so many of their animals. And it's a walkway that allows the animals in Philadelphia to get outside and walk around over top people's heads. Well, the colobus monkeys were the last animals here that really didn't have access to outside facilities, the last mammals. And we decided that we would replicate what Philadelphia did. And Baltimore County was the supporting organization that gave us the money. Baltimore County is a terrific partner of the Maryland Zoo, terrific. Has been, by the way, has been for decades.
Somebody in the county's yelling, but it's in the city. Yeah, well, it's yours too.
Well, guess what? Most of the visitors that come to this zoo come from Baltimore County as well as the city.
And Kevin knew that, and Jim Smith knew that, and Dutch knew that, as you said. Goes on for decades. Dennis knew that,
yeah. Absolutely. It's gone on for a long, long time. It actually started with Ted Venatoulis, and then I was in the next administration and carried on the tradition. And that is also true of support for other organizations, like the art museums and the symphony.
Don, it's interesting. That's a nice segue, actually, into the politics. Because Ted really doesn't get enough. We had Ted on. Ted doesn't get enough credit for really beginning to have Baltimore County take a regional approach. As you know, because it goes back early in your career, when you were elected back in 1969, there was a group of Baltimore County elected officials that for years before you and Ted and that sort of shift in philosophy, that really didn't want anything to do with Baltimore City, right? Pretty accurate.
Well, it's one of the great ironies. You know, Baltimore, all of us that were born and raised in Baltimore County, and I lived in Baltimore City for almost 15 years back when I was president of the Greater Baltimore Committee. But all of us that live and grew up in Baltimore County, I grew up in Essex. That's Hollandtown with grass. And, you know, that's
don't say that about Dundalk. Come on, Don.
Yeah.
What are you going to call Dundalk?
Kenwood High School Blue Jays. Right?
I graduated from Kenwood High School so many years ago. And it was the biggest school in Baltimore County. Look, when I was out traveling, if I was out out west somewhere, if I was traveling and somebody said, where are you from? I never said Essex.
Right.
By the way, I was proud to be from Essex. But I never said I was from Essex. I said I was from Baltimore.
Oh, cool.
And that's one of the great challenges of our city. All of us that were born and raised in the city, I was born at Lutheran Hospital in Baltimore City. Lutheran Hospital doesn't exist anymore. But I was born at Lutheran Hospital in Baltimore City. All of us that were born in Baltimore City and were raised in Baltimore County, we consider ourselves Baltimoreans. That's one of the great ironies. We are Baltimoreans, and yet half the population in our community does not have Baltimore as part of the jurisdiction that we are financially and morally responsible for. It's one of the great, remarkable different kinds of structures that we have in Maryland that allows Baltimore City to be a county unto itself. That's what Baltimore City is. Only St. Louis, of all the cities of size similar to Baltimore, only St. Louis is structured the same way.
In a perfect world, Don, would we have done it differently?
No, you know, look, I contradict myself in this argument because I'll say in the same breath, it allows Baltimore County to have the way Baltimore County is structured. It's the strongest county executive system in the United States. Again, Don, you know this. It is literally the strongest county executive system in the United States for two reasons. control of the county budget lies in the hands of the county executive, and there are no incorporated municipalities to share responsibility with. No small town mayors, no small town councils. One county council, one county executive, and it makes for a remarkably efficient government. People who live in Baltimore County know they have this remarkably efficient police department, remarkably efficient volunteer and paid fire department, volunteer and paid recreation and parks department, a very effective and efficient county school system. Everybody understands that. The structure that we have allows for that kind of efficiency and that kind of capacity for good government. The contradiction is that because Baltimore City is not part of the county, financially it is a challenge for the city. And there aren't any other cities like it in the country. You know, I always use this story. Actually, not this story, just sort of this reference. And maybe this city is unfair for me to mention because there really is not a comparison. But Jacksonville, if you're in Jacksonville, Florida, Baltimore County is a 600-square-mile city, and County is a 600-square-mile county, and Baltimore City is a 90-square-mile city. If you're in Jacksonville, it's a city of 900 square miles. If you live in Haverty Grace, you live in the city. If we were comparable and you lived in Haverty Grace, you would be living in Baltimore City if we were structured like Jacksonville.
And all the way down to Glen Burnie and all the way out to Westminster.
Absolutely.
Literally.
And it would be this great sharing of financial responsibility. And we don't have that structure.
That comes up. I mean, Don, as you know, certainly the Sun paper has rung that bell for a number of years. And we know we sit in these lunches, and as former county executives, we try to solve all the problems of the world from time to time. We bring that up, and we know that it's something that's not likely ever to happen. But at the same time, we see the benefits that you're describing should it happen.
Sure. And look, you have to give the state of Maryland credit. The state of Maryland provides some of that significant amount of gap financing for Baltimore City. There's a recognition that it's a standalone subdivision. There's a recognition that a great number of folks that live in the city do not have the same financial means as so many other people who live in other parts of the state. And there's a recognition by the state to provide financial support. So the state of Maryland must be given credit for providing some significant financial support, particularly in the education system and particularly in the police department, where there are direct assistance programs and direct financial support programs. We all know that. And so the state makes up for some of the gap that's created by Baltimore City and Baltimore County not being a part of the same subdivision. You're right. I'm not sitting here suggesting that there be a merger of the subdivisions, because we know politically the way it's structured, with referendums required, right, with voters in both subdivisions having to approve it, that kind of thing will never happen. It won't happen in our lifetime, and I don't see it happening in the lifetimes of the one and two and three and four generations behind us. It's just a realization of the struggles that this city has without being a part of a subdivision like Baltimore County. And it also goes to what we started this conversation about, and that is the responsibility we have as Baltimore Countyans. I live in the county again. The responsibility that we have to provide support for institutions like the zoo, for the art museums, for the symphony in Baltimore. We are the beneficiaries of it. We're the folks that go, as much as the city folks do, that go into these venues and enjoy them.
Don,
and that's the reason we have that responsibility.
Don Hutchinson is our guest. He is, he'll be leaving the zoo at some point here this summer, but is with us. And this is why Baltimore Positive was built, Don. I mean, I was watching Don Moeller run the county a year and a half ago, and a little throwback for you. I campaigned against you in 78. John Coulihan was the lawyer that got my parents custody of me. And John Coulihan, the Lion of Halthorpe, was actually the reason I'm here today and not in Maracaibo, Venezuela. Venezuela as an aparicio. My father was trying to run off to Venezuela with me, and John Coulihan got my parents custody, and that's why I'm here. And I ran again. I almost feel guilty. It's like Venatulis when I gave him a ride home from Cadesville last week. I feel dirty, but I also feel like I have to go full disclosure, you know, let you know this.
Look, Coulihan and I were great friends. And by the way, Nestor, you're not the only person that has said that to me. I have a volunteer here. I'm not going to mention his name. He's a terrific volunteer. He's here every week. And about every fourth week, he reminds me he voted for Coulihan. And he always tells me, he says, you are a terrific zoo president. I can't tell you how proud I am of how great a zoo president you are. Oh, but by the way, it doesn't matter. I voted for John Cooley in 1978.
Well, I was Dundalk as well. But I will give you this. You talked about the incredible education system in Dundalk, in Baltimore County. At Dundalk High, 1982, Don Moeller was my high school guidance counselor. And you'll appreciate this. He told me I was going to grow up to be the next Chris Thomas.
There you go.
And this is...
Well, there's a good guy. Now, let me tell you. Following, and people won't remember Chris Thomas, but I certainly do. Chris Thomas was a terrific, terrific news media guy, sports guy, terrific.
We used to prop up Bob Irsay, the dummy on the bar after the team left and all.
Don't even talk to me about Irsay. Look, I went to Chicago. Here goes my political rant. I went to Chicago with Governor Hughes and with Mayor Schaefer. And Frank DeFrantis to try to convince right before Irsay took the Colts out of Baltimore. I went to him flew out in a private jet. The four of us flew out, sat down with Irsay at lunchtime at his private club outside of the city of Chicago in a snowy January day. And we sat, and he ordered lunch in his private golf club that was closed, by the way, to the broad public. He had it opened up for this event. Just his lawyer and the four of us, and while we ate lunch and talked business, he drank martinis. This is true. He drank martinis, and we just knew that every promise he was making was going to be forgotten at the moment because he was just incapable. He was just incapable.
Tiger Bob, before you were at the zoo, right?
Incapable of being able to have a conversation.
A liquid lunch.
Yeah, that's all I can tell you.
Nestor, I told you, I don't even know if I've shared this with you, Nestor, but Don, I'm forever appreciative that we had the tragic passing of Kevin Kamenetz, and once I was appointed roughly a week later, one of the first calls I made was to Don Hutchinson. Along with the other county execs, all were gracious with their time in talking to me or meeting with me that first week. And Don gave me one of the most important pieces of advice that anyone gave me in that week. And he said, I don't know if you remember it, Don, we were on the phone, and he said, Don, I'm going to tell you one thing. It's the one thing you need to remember. Don't think of yourself as an interim. You're not a placeholder. You got 7.5 months. Be the county executive. And I never forget it. I actually wrote it down on the calendar I had on my desk, and it was invaluable, Don. So I publicly want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
Because I think it really did matter. Well, Don, Nestor has been waiting this last 10 minutes. He's been champing, I guess is the actual English, the correct English part of it, at the bit for you to talk about. We're in the midst of a pandemic. We get to see leadership on display every day by Governor Cuomo.
Every day, in a way
Governor
we would never
Hogan
see it. Yeah.
And Governor Newsom. And then we get to see something else at 5 o'clock at night, which I don't know that any of us can make sense of it. So we're going to turn to you as the professor and say, help us make sense out of what the hell is happening.
Well, the 5 o'clock press conferences that last an hour and 50 minutes is really something that's almost unexplainable, because if the current occupant had an understanding of what it shows him to be, I think he would take himself right off the air. But let me give you a kind of a different spin on this. You know, one of the weaknesses that we have as a country is that if you ask the general public to explain the federal system of government and what it means, most would have an extremely difficult time in really telling you of how the government responsibility is shared between the national government, the state government, and the local governments. And while what we're seeing today play out across America shows the weakness of what happens at a national level when you don't have precise and focused and intelligent leadership, it also shows you the strength of what the constitutional writers, what Madison and Hamilton and Washington were responsible for back in 1787. By establishing this federal system of government with shared responsibilities between the state and federal and local government, it shows you the strength. It shows you right now the strength of the United States government is in the hands of the mayors and the county executives and the governors. And the, you know, one of the weaknesses is that we have 50 decision makers right now that are making decisions about each of their various states. But it's also one of the strengths because you don't have someone who's willing to make strong decisions at a national level and who knows how to make a strong decision at a national level. So you have mayors and you have state governors that are making these decisions and are keeping the virus. I'm not saying it's under control. It's certainly not under control. But if and when we get out of this situation that we're in with this virus without the 2 million predicted people dying, if we get out of it, or 200,000 people dying, I'm sorry, 200,000 people dying, if we get out of it without that kind of run-up in unfortunate deaths, it's going to be because the governors took control and the mayor of New York took control and the mayor of Baltimore took control and wound up making decisions that forced us all into this very, very unfortunate and uncomfortable situation. But what I think is going to turn out to be what's going to be a lifesaver for all of us.
Don, go ahead, Master. One of the first parts of this thing was a year and a half ago. Don's running the county. I'm inspired by that. He's leaving, and I said, like, I want to do this thing. I don't want to stick to sports anymore, even though I've done that for 30 years. I think things are going to be more important than that. I mean, here locally, this mayor's race and moving it to June 2nd and watching the voter suppression in Wisconsin this week and seeing what mail-in ballots are about and this pushback to literally take away voters' rights in this country. You know, my mom was born in 1919, and we lost her a couple of years ago, and she always spoke to me about suffrage. The day she was born, she would not be able to vote, and she spent her whole life being able to vote. The right for people to vote to be taken away, and to see what I saw on Tuesday morning, these five-hour lines in Wisconsin, they closed polling places down to five locations because of the virus, using the virus as an excuse for this maniac to be in charge of the country. This is starting to happen at a local level, right?
Well, look, the sanctity of elections in America is what the Constitution is all about. It's what it's all about. And the structure that we have and the succession that we have and the shared leadership that we have. My daughter lives in London, and Don knows this. My daughter and her family, they live right in the heart of London. Actually, my two grandchildren were born in the same hospital where Boris Johnson is currently an occupant. Yeah, they were born in the exact same hospital. One of the things that there's everybody needs to know about the UK is they don't have right now a natural succession of who the next prime minister is. Who's the person that's in charge right now? Boris Johnson had to designate somebody. We don't have that set of circumstances. We have a line of succession that goes through the vice presidency, that goes through the speaker. We have these shared responsibilities of local government and local government decision makers. And they don't in the UK. They don't have that same kind of structure across the UK. All of our success and all of the decisions that are being made by governors and by mayors are being made by people who went through the election process, who went through a campaign process, who went through a process that allows voters to make intelligent judgments about the kind of leadership they want at a given moment. When you interrupt an election like the interruption that's happening in Wisconsin right now, and I'll say this, it's an election nonetheless, but it is a primary election. Thank God we're not where they are. We probably will not be in November where Wisconsin is today.
Well, I worry about that, though, Don.
Oh, you kidding me? Are you kidding me, too? To think that people, that's to use the term, that voter suppression could happen, that literally direct voter suppression could happen. And in this case, it could happen on a state-by-state basis. This is where, when you don't have the right leadership at the national level and local governments are making decisions, wrong decisions can be made. I go through this contradiction. The strength of our government right now is what's happening at the state and local level, but there are opportunities for mischievousness to take place at the state and local level if somebody on a partisan basis wants to suppress voters. We've seen it happen. We saw it happen in Georgia back 2 years ago, or 4 years ago. We've seen that happen across the country, and that's what's happening in Wisconsin right now. Look, the virus has created a special set of circumstances in Wisconsin. I don't know what the right answer is, but I can tell you that if the same kind of thing happens in November, the election will be a flawed election. No matter who wins, it will be a flawed election, regardless if people are suppressed from voting, regardless of who they were going to vote for and where they live.
I can't think of anything more un-American, to be honest with you, right? I mean, literally.
I'm sorry.
John, you and I have had a discussion previously when we've been together that as outrageous as it would have seemed once upon a time, the suggestion that we may now have a president who deems the election results questionable and says, I'm actually not leaving right now, no longer seems to be some kind of crazy dream, but something that we might actually have to consider what happens at this point, right?
Yeah, it's a little goofy, and it'll be very interesting to see under those circumstances. And I think that it's a far-fetched circumstance. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I don't think that's going to be the result. But under those circumstances, where for the first time ever, here's the one thing I'll say about what you've just set up in front of us, Don. We are for the first time ever in that position as a country.
Right.
First time ever. That we could even have this conversation about somebody who just might refuse to walk out of the White House based upon what his interpretation of what happened on Election Day might be. What I know, though, is that
which is an indictment to the fact that he ever got elected to begin with. Let's start with that.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. But what I know is that on January 20th, regardless of the Constitution dictates that there is he's not president. Now, how we wind up and what the court winds up deciding, if it were to be thrown in that position, who knows how that plays out? I don't know. You can predict if you predict and watch what happened in Wisconsin yesterday, you might predict that the court might fall in the wrong place.
Well, Don, I'm still not over senators doing what they did, because, I mean, this could be President Pelosi in the middle of this, right?
We're
four senators away from this guy being in jail, right? Like, literally.
Now, here's a piece of trivial information, and I'm going to base this, what I'm about to say, in a very general way. But I have a terrific amount of trust in Chief Justice Roberts, and here's why. And it has nothing to do with these politics, has nothing to do with prior decisions. I can't talk to you about constitutional law in any kind of really well-informed, intelligent way other than what I read on a regular basis. But John Roberts' father, this is a piece of trivial information. John Roberts' father was the general manager of Bethlehem Steel in Sparrows Point when I was county executive.
Wow.
You got to be kidding.
No. John Roberts and I became a good friend of his. They were still the largest employer in Baltimore County. They still had a terrific workforce in Baltimore County.
Every meal I ever ate, Dom, was my father worked at the point in the 70s.
And now here's another little story. John Roberts' sister lives in Baltimore still. And she's a paralegal. I won't tell you her first name. She's a paralegal here in Baltimore. The family is a terrific family. An honorable, honest family. And I know them going back into the 1980s when I left as county executive. And I have terrific trust that he will do right by what he thinks the law dictates that he should do, and that he will not play partisan politics as a part of his decision-making process. And I have trust in that, and I trust him to be a deciding vote in almost all these decisions that are going to come out of this court over the next couple of years. I think he's going to be the key member of that court. I would just say that about him only because of my relationship that I had with his dad and the awareness I know of his sister and the friendship that I've had with her over the years.
Great story. Don, I hope we can have you back on Baltimore Positive as a regular commentator post-Zoo Life. Glad to do it. I think, on behalf of everyone in the region, just thank you for really an incredible career in public service. You deserved a little time off, but we're going to encroach upon that a little bit and have you back on as a regular commentator on Baltimore Positive.
Glad to do it, Don. I've had more fun in my life, Don, than anybody could ever imagine.
Hey, Don, I tell you what, man, give Winnie a high five for me.
All right. She and I are personal friends. I just want you to know.
Well, I know you. When you need more, you need friends that are animals at this point, right? I'm friends with my cat. I can't have people.
Sure.
I'm not allowed to hug Moeller anymore. Don Moeller and Don Hutchinson, two Baltimore County executives here. Don Hutchinson, of course, the president and CEO at the Maryland Zoo, and we'll get back to brewing at the zoo and penguining at the zoo and monkeying at the zoo and goating at the zoo and goat grooming and all that good stuff they do there. Make sure you get out to the Maryland Zoo. Check out all they're doing online here during the COVID. They are closed to guests until further notice, but they are open for business online, and you can check out the webcams, as my wife is wont to do as well, at MarylandZoo.org. Don and I want to thank State Fair and, of course, our friends at Fadley's. You can ship those crab cakes. You can order curbside online over at State Fair in Catonsville, as well as Moeller and Gary. You can check out Jeff Moeller and I's fantastic conversation about children and parenting and real estating out in the buy at toyota.com, audio vault at wnst.net. We are keeping calm. We are staying local. Nothing more local than two Dons, Don Hutchinson and Don Moeller. We are wnst.net, Towson, Baltimore, and, of course, Baltimore Positive.